This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is we're focusing on family law, but specifically kidnapped or abducted child or children by one parent from another and the successful return of that child or children to the other parent. My guests are Amy Sarah Kors, a National Board of Trial Advocacy certified family law trial advocate, a fellow of the American Academy of Matrimonial Law Attorneys. Her law firm is Kors & Associates in Howell, New Jersey. My other guest is B.J. Fadum, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization with his law office in San Jose. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the actual NPR satellite transmission of the program. Additional funding is by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the San Francisco Bar Association. Welcome, Amy and BJ. Are you there, I hope?
I am. Hi, Chuck. How you doing?
Amy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, oh, good. All right. Very good. Both of my guests are with us by a conference call, and I just wanted to make sure they were there. Amy, in your practice, and this is not something that I've been involved with, and I hope most people have not been, but as I understand from what BJ has told me, it is more frequent that one parent will abduct a child from the other parent that we all laypersons know about. And Amy, if you're involved as an attorney in something like this, with one parent taking a child and essentially hiding it or keeping it away from the other parent, how do you deal with this?
Well, I guess there's a couple of different things that you want to do. The first thing you want to do is get some basic information about the backgrounds of the parties. You want to send your client, the parent that comes to you, assuming it's the parent that the child's been taken from, you want to send them over to the police to file a police report. You want to find out if there's an order of custody already in place and get them immediately into court. And you want to try and get as much factual information about the situation that's going on as possible. And then from there, you would take a look and see what laws applied, whether or not they needed an attorney in the other state or the other country, and start to put together the case that you would need to build for them to get that child back.
If there is no order of custody, let's say, BJ, we're in California here, and a child has been abducted or taken or kidnapped, whatever wording we want to use, from California to another state, but there is no order of custody, how do you deal with something like that, BJ?
Well, the first thing we want to do is if the child has truly been really residing in California, that's what Amy's talking about. You want to establish that the child this is their home. They've been here at least 6 months prior to the abduction, or what we call wrongful retention sometimes. But if there's no order and California is truly the home of the child, I want to get into, other than making the child abduction reports, as Amy has said, I want to get into court as soon as possible to get custody orders, even though they may be temporary at the time, but to get that established so that we have California has established jurisdiction, which is important because especially when you're talking about the laws of jurisdiction for custody across the 50 states, we refer to it as the UCCJEA, the Uniform Child Custody and Jurisdiction Enforcement Act. If the home state takes jurisdiction first and issues a custody order, they will, and it's proper jurisdiction, they have exclusive and continuing jurisdiction. So you want to get into California as the what we call the home state, the proper home of the child, and get those custody orders in place as soon as possible.
How do you do it, Amy? How do you deal with something like this?
Yeah, same thing. If there's no existing custody order, I'm going to file the proper paperwork with the court and ask the judge to enter an order on what we would call an emergent basis, meaning you got to hear this today, Judge. This is a crisis situation. And I'm going to lay out a whole bunch of different things that I want the judge to put in his or her decision so that when I take that order to the other state or the other country, I've got certain things laid out, elements of what I need either under the International Child Abduction Convention or under the UCCJEA to get the other state to say, you know what, I want to send this case back to, you know, New Jersey, where Amy got this great order from the judge there, because that's really where it belongs.
What if the parent who wants the child to come back, in other words, the parent has, this is a parent who feels that he or she has been violated by the other parent by abducting or kidnapping the child. What if that parent, your client or your potential client, does not have the funds to pay you? I mean, lawyers are expensive. What do you suggest for someone like that?
If the child has been taken from New Jersey to another state and they don't have the funds to pay my fees, we don't have free legal services in the state of New Jersey for family law cases. So, you know, they could try and find an attorney that would take the case on a pro bono basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's not likely that many attorneys will take these cases because they're very, very complicated. But oftentimes they're able to go just to the courthouse and fill out the paperwork, and because it's such an extreme situation, the judges will hear the case and sort of walk them through the elements, and if they're able to enter the order, they will oftentimes enter the order compelling the child to be returned to the state and then bring everybody in, even if they're all unrepresented or pro se litigants, so that the judge can hear all the facts from everybody.
But if
and sometimes the judges will even have their staff call the other parent and get the other parent on the phone and mm-hmm. and just have everybody sworn in and take some testimony and try and find out what's going on.
Well, just to perhaps give you a simple example, at least to me, if for example the child was abducted from New Jersey and is now down in Texas and the person who can't, the parent who can't afford an attorney goes into court, as you've described, Amy, and the court issues an order, how is that going to be dealt with in terms of the mechanism when obviously that parent cannot afford to have an attorney and the other parent is down in Texas? How do you deal with something like that?
So if you get an order here in New Jersey and it says that the child has to come back, they'll also set what we would refer to as a return date, so a date that the case would come back, and the parent who's now in Texas would have to bring the child back. If that parent doesn't do that,
yes,
and violates the court order, then on that return date, the judge will usually take the next step, if you will, and say, okay, New Jersey parent, I'm going to now give you an order that says you can go down to Texas and you can reach out to local law enforcement and you can pick up this child and bring the child back into the state.
Well, when you get the order of the court, such as the unrepresented parent who's trying to bring the child back, and the court issues an order, is that order, let's say, sent from by the court in New Jersey down to the court in Texas to begin with, or how does that order of pardon me, go ahead, BJ.
Yeah. So what we normally have to do, and in California, actually, we have pro bono services through, so for example, in Santa Clara County, there's the pro bono project. If you qualify, there is a network of attorneys that, so for example, my office will take 1 to 2 pro bono cases from the pro bono project per year,
mm-hmm.
and they know that I do the jurisdiction. And then if it's an international one, if they contact the Office of Children's Services and the Hague Network of Attorneys, I and Amy gets these too, where we'll get referrals, you know, we've got a pro bono case to do. Then what the mechanism would be, we would help it and get the custody order out of California and then work with an attorney or work with the court in Texas to get
mm-hmm.
get it registered
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
that they can enforce it in Texas if necessary. But a lot of times what we've been able to do is if you get a copy of the certified order and take it to the other, to law enforcement in the other state, having the court put in there that For example, a lot of times they'll put in that, in fact, almost all of the cases, the court in California will put in to be referred to the district attorney's child abduction unit for assistance, and they can help from state to state. Years ago, I had a situation like that where it was the child was going to be abducted back to Iran, but we knew that they were in Georgia about to get on the plane, and rushed in and within less than 12 hours got the order, and they actually caught them in line getting on the plane in Georgia. And we didn't have time to register it in Georgia, but we did have a certified copy of the order, and that was good enough to get the child back.
If you get the DA's office involved, the child abduction or whatever the title of that division of the DA's office may be, whatever state we're talking about, what's the process, if any, of criminal prosecution, Amy? How do you deal with something like that?
Sometimes they're willing to move forward on criminal charges, and sometimes they're not. It depends on the facts and circumstances of the case. In the situation just described, the question, I suppose, would be whether or not Georgia would pursue the charges or California would pursue the charges. Oftentimes, prosecutors look at these types of cases as, really custody disputes or squabbles between parents as opposed to real crimes, even though there is a criminal statute that deals with parental child kidnapping, any child kidnapping. But in my experience, and I would also say in BJ's experience from our conversation, you don't necessarily want to push criminal charges in one of these cases because it may make it more difficult to get the children back.
Why do you say that?
Well, we have an infamous case here in New Jersey where there's a woman sitting in jail and the kids are still sitting in Greece, and this has been going on for years.
Oh, my.
So just because you are successful in having a parent arrested, possibly even tried and convicted, if that parent has already secreted the children,
yes,
you may not be able to find them. You may not be able to get them back. You may be dealing with another country that doesn't want to return the children.
Good point.
Family members that are, calculating to help perpetuate and hide these children. So, it becomes, again, a strategy that you want to discuss with your client, and depending on where the children are at, where you're at in the litigation, what the extreme circumstances may be at the beginning of the case, the situation that he described with them getting on a plane, that's the type of situation where, if you can get law enforcement involved to stop them from going to a country like Iran where it may be virtually impossible to get them back, you want to do that. In other cases, you may just want to try and, coerce the parent to come back to the original state as opposed to having them arrested in another state.
For those
Correct.
Of you...
And sometimes they'll use that as an excuse, saying, well, now you've made it impossible for me to return with the children, I'll be arrested.
Good point. You've got to be really, obviously very careful that you want to have success as opposed to just a wall, let's say, and you can't go any further. For those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. It's my pleasure to have a couple of very experienced family law attorneys. B.J. Fatum is a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in San Jose. And it's also my pleasure to have Amy Sarah Kors, a National Board of Trial Advocacy certified family law trial advocate and a fellow of the American Academy of Matrimonial Law Attorneys. Her office is the firm of Kors and Associates in Howell, New Jersey. And for those of you listening to the live program, we're doing this on Wednesday, May 17th. In a few minutes, I will give you our toll-free number, and you can call in and ask some questions. Obviously, both of these attorneys are highly experienced specialists in family law. If you are looking for a specialist, I'm going to give you a couple of websites that I think would be helpful to you. I hope you don't need them, but I'd like you to know about it. If you are looking for a specialist in California, the California Board of Legal Specialization has 11 specialties, not only including family law, but 10 others. If you're trying to find out in your county who your specialist may be in any one of the 11 specialties, go to the website on the internet at www.calbar.ca.gov. And go to the upper left-hand corner of your screen, which says Legal Specialist, and click that on your county and then the specialty you're looking for. If you're looking for any of the four specialties of the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also includes family law, that website is www.nbtalawyers.org, NBTA, National Board of Trial Advocacy, www.nbtalawyers.org. And that will tell you, whatever state you're in, who the specialists are in your particular state. How often, BJ and Amy, do you find that perhaps one parent may be saying that, I am a victim of domestic violence and I've got to take my child or children with me, and that is the basis for the so-called either kidnapping or abduction of the children from one parent to the other. How often do you find that happening?
Well, as we were talking before, Amy and I both agree that in most family law cases, period, where custody is going to be an issue, it seems to be an underlying theme. The concern is that sometimes it gets abused, and if it's later up the line found not to be truthful, it actually will hurt the person rather than help them. But sometimes it's used to gain a foothold in the custody issue. But when it comes to the abduction, so for example, we were talking if it's an international abduction or what we call wrongful retention, because sometimes what they'll do is say, we're going on vacation, we'll be back on this date. They get there and then they notify the other parent, oh, by the way, we're not coming back.
I see.
And they will use that as their defense to ask the court not to order the return of the children because of domestic violence, whether it's under what we call the Hague Treaty between certain countries, or if it's from state to state, what we've been referring to as the UCCJEA, and claim that as a defense.
We have in New Jersey in particular, we have a presumption under the law that if you have been found to be the aggressor or abuser in a domestic violence situation, that you're not fit to be the custodial parent of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So in real world terms, what that means is that if somebody goes into court, makes an allegation of domestic violence, the court's going to give them temporary custody of the children. If that temporary order of protection is then converted to a final order, and in New Jersey we do have final orders, meaning they last forever.
Mm.
I know that's different than California, but under that order you could be given custody of the children, then it becomes, in many cases, almost impossible for the other parent to overcome that burden that they would not be able to have primary custody. They'll have access, they'll have parental access, time with the children, but they're always sort of looked at as being a little bit suspect. So unfortunately, sometimes allegations of domestic violence are used in that manner. In kidnapping cases, if someone goes to another state or another country and seeks an order of protection under the domestic violence laws, that can often set the precedent for how the case is going to go, because that's going to be their defense to returning the children, is that they don't want to go back because it's an awful situation to expose the children to.
In
correct. And California has similar. It's a presumption. It's under the umbrella of a federal law that almost all the states have codified in their state laws. In California, it's Family Code Section 3044, that if there is a finding of domestic violence, then there's a presumption that the abuser cannot have custody of the children. So exactly the same thing that Amy said is in New Jersey.
In your representing one parent who's trying to get the child back, is the great majority of the cases that you are involved with, are they filed, whether it's California or New Jersey, are you filing them in a state court as opposed to a federal district court?
So if it's an international child abduction or kidnapping, mm-hmm. you have the choice under the Hague Convention to file in state court or in federal court.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Otherwise, if it's just a kidnapping case where they went from New Jersey to California, you're filing in state court. The federal courts in this country absolutely despise hearing anything loosely related to a custody dispute or a family law dispute. They are courts of limited, what we call courts of limited jurisdiction, so they would have to have, there would have to be some federal law that gives them the ability to hear those types of cases. Family law cases are state cases. They're
correct.
Codified by state law.
And the reason why you have the option under the Hague only is the Hague Convention, when there's an abduction of the child, the court isn't to determine custody. It's to determine what country is the proper jurisdiction mm-hmm. to decide custody. And I would say about half of my Hague cases have been in federal court and half in state. And sometimes it's a strategy. So the way most Hague petitions for a child wrongfully abducted to California or kept in California come through Washington, D.C., through the Office of Children's Services, and the petition will come through and then goes through for California through the state attorney. Then, depending upon the county of where the child is being held, then gets sent to the district attorney of that county, who then presents it to the state court as what we call here a friend of the court. They're not representing the left-behind parent. They're supposed to be neutral. And they will pursue and be involved in the Hague proceeding if it remains in state court. But then it can be removed to federal. I will sometimes use that as a strategy to let the district attorney go ahead and file the Hague petition in the state court of the proper county. And then depending upon, you know, the judge it gets assigned to and things like that, then I may discuss, is it a good idea to remove it to federal court and pursue it in federal court, depending upon, again, what district we would be in federal court. So sometimes it is a discussion of strategy, but it can be in either one, and you want to decide where you really want to pursue it. And I don't know if Amy uses the same type of strategy.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have California has a much more evolved system than New Jersey does for handling these cases. So they're going to be initiated by private counsel in the first instance. Mm-hmm. And so the strategy here really becomes if there's facts that would make me believe that I'm not going to be able to get the child returned to the other country, but I want to have the ability to, you know, get some sympathy from the court or have the court gain some level of familiarity with the facts of the case, because I'm then going to have a custody case or a divorce case or something like that play out, then I might want to file it in state court because I'll have a judge that will know the case well, and then when we proceed past the abduction portion of it, that the judge might be more sympathetic to my client's position as far as what a parenting time schedule might be, or even if a judge doesn't order the child to be returned as being kidnapped, you can still get primary custody for your client in the other country. So it's more of a strategy on the substance of a case from my perspective here in New Jersey than it is on, and I don't want to say this in a pejorative manner, but on sort of judge shopping, as you described.
Yeah, yeah. What I'd like all of you to know is that the program is live for an hour. The first part of the program, the half hour, is recorded. It's a statewide version, and we send it out, the station sends it out, to a number of stations in California which air it delayed. If you would like to hear the entire hour, if you only get the half hour version, or if whether you listen to the full hour or not, you can get a free podcast of the program, the full hour, if you like. And here's the website. It'll be available as of tomorrow, www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. So for a free podcast of the entire hour, you can get it on the internet at www.kalw.org/subscribe. In the remaining, let's say, couple of minutes, or actually minute and a half, Amy, of the statewide version of the program, would you talk briefly about your presentations on kidnapping prevention?
My presentations on kidnapping prevention, yes. So over the last couple of years, what I've been doing with a lot of local attorneys is, and I think a lot of us that do these cases have been trying to find ways to make it easier if a child is kidnapped, but also to deter people from just kidnapping children at all. So when a case is presented, if it's a custody case or a divorce case where there are children involved, and you know that one parent is, say, from another country, and they're going to be traveling internationally regularly, we'll draft agreements now that have all sorts of provisions in them about retaining what we call jurisdiction, or the ability of the court here in New Jersey to hear the case. We'll put in provisions about obtaining passports, parents cooperating with obtaining passports, who's going to hold the passports.
Amy, I'm going to have to interrupt you at this point. We'll continue it in the second half hour as we have come to the end of the statewide version. All right, everybody, I'm going to give you, and we'll get back to Amy in just a moment on the kidnapping prevention that she does. But if you would like to call in either on the kidnapping abduction aspect of the family law that we've been talking about, or if you have some other question on family law, here's our toll-free number wherever you may be. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, that's toll-free, and we welcome you to call in and tell us what your question is or what your comment is. I want to let you know, if you tune in just a little bit late, who my guests are. This is Your Legal Rights from KLW Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Amy Sarah Kors, a National Board of Trial Advocacy, certified family law trial advocate, and a fellow of the American Academy of Matrimonial Law Attorneys with her law firm of Kors and Associates in Howell, New Jersey. And B.J. Fadum, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in San Jose, California. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. In California, nearly all counties have a bar association and a lawyer referral service, which is a great consumer service. If you have a legal problem, you can call your lawyer referral service in your county, tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best to find an experienced attorney to have a consultation with you for a half an hour. And with minor exception, in California, you will pay to have that half an hour consultation with the attorney, $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep the lawyer referral service going. It's a great public service, so I highly recommend it to you. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you've been listening to this program for any period of time, and I've been doing it now for 32 years, believe it or not, as you may know, I'm a real believer in access to the law for all of us, not just lawyers, but for everybody. If you're in San Mateo County, I'd like you to know that there is considerable concern that the law library may have to close. The San Mateo County Law Library Foundation is hosting a spring fundraiser tomorrow, Thursday, May 18th at 5 p.m. in the Law Library, located in downtown Redwood City across the street from the Hall of Justice. The San Mateo County Law Library is not supported by local or state taxes, but rather by a portion of Superior Court filing fees, which have dropped over 40% in the last 6 years, forcing the library to cut services and collections. So if you are someone who values access to the law, such as having a law library, or believe that something like this should be available for all of us, please celebrate the 101 years of the Law Library and help ensure continued access to the law for all citizens. And if you'd like to find out about tickets or more information, here's the website for the Law Library, www.smcl, which stands for San Mateo County Law, www.smclfoundation.org, www.smclfoundation.org. And in that we are doing this program live this evening on May 17th, again, I urge those of you who would like to pose a question, whatever the question may be in family law, I'm inviting you to call in on our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Please don't wait another 20 minutes or so because we will be finished, and I don't want that to happen. I'm going to give you a chance to be able to call in. What do you find, Amy, to be the most difficult part of your job in trying to help a parent who is someone trying to seek their child or children to get back to being with that parent?
Most of the people that I've represented over the last couple of years are people from other countries who have had their children brought here to the United States. And I work with the State Department, and they'll send these people to me. So
you're talking about the federal State Department?
Yes, the United States State Department of State.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a program. It's called the ICANN Network, and it's volunteer attorneys throughout the country that assist people who have had children, you know, wrongfully brought here to the United States to help them get their children back. Because in other countries, there's attorneys that represent Americans who have had their children taken to other countries. So it's a wonderful international cooperative system where there are people in other countries helping our citizens, and we're here helping citizens from other countries, all to make sure that children are returned to the right place in the world so that their parents can then have the custody issues heard by the correct courts in the world.
If Amy, if someone is confronted with this, if they Google the U.S. State Department, will they be able to access or find this availability that may be helpful to them?
Yeah, it would be under the United States State Department Office of Children's Affairs.
I see. Okay.
It's a program. The program actually used to be run by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and then it was taken over by the State Department, I want to say about 8 years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. The people are absolutely wonderful. They're very helpful. They're very knowledgeable. They're also the ones that process the applications that are transmitted to the other countries and the applications that are transmitted from other countries to the United States under the Hague Convention for child abduction. And so, you know, this is all they do is take in these applications and try and coordinate all of us and help people. And so
they also work.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say they also because I work with, I do the same thing, and they also have been so helpful in finding resources for us, both here and in other countries, for what we need to pursue with The Hague. And then they follow and make sure that everything is proceeding. I mean, they're constantly getting updates to make sure that everything is proceeding as quickly as possible.
Yeah, they put out annual reports about, you know, different statistics with cases being resolved. They have people that are basically assigned to specific countries. So depending on which country you're dealing with, you'll have a particular person in the State Department who's dealing with, say, you know, there's one person that does, say, France and Germany, and then another person that does Ecuador and Brazil.
Well, that's very interesting.
They're regionalized. They often speak a second language or even a third language, and they can be wonderful, wonderful resources.
So again, this is the U.S. This is the U.S. State Department of Children's Affairs.
Cases, the problem becomes that the people from the other countries don't speak English, and you're often dealing with an interpreter and trying to explain complex legal principles to someone. And it's then going to be interpreted by someone who's not familiar with all of the legalese into the you know, native tongue of this other person who may or may not be a very sophisticated individual. It becomes very difficult to explain how all of this stuff plays out and works. It's difficult to explain it to other attorneys, so you can just imagine how hard that is.
Very, very complicated area. Before we take our first call, I just want to say again that this is, if someone has a concern such as this, it's the United States Department of Children's Affairs, where you can find out about this. Our first caller is Alejandro. Alejandro, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if that's a general question, but I currently have I have custody of a toddler, a two-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we haven't gone through any of the courts or whatnot. I've been sober for a year and a half, and I have him every day. I pick him up, have him for a couple hours, like Monday through Friday, and on the weekends sometimes he spends the night. And generally it's okay, but I get, if something doesn't go right, if something angers her, there's a lot of verbal abuse through, in front of my son, via text, on the phone. She has him for Christmas. She takes him to Texas. I don't know what my rights are. And I'm afraid because she makes double of what I make. So she can afford the lawyers and all that stuff.
And you don't feel you can afford a lawyer, is that right?
Maybe the retainer. I don't know. I can take out my 401k. But I don't know.
So Alejandro, are you in California?
I'm in California. I'm in Oakland, California.
And are you married, or is this, or you just have a child together?
We just have a child together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking is there are some code sections that will allow you to get attorney's fees from the other side if there is a disparity of income under the California statutes. But it sounds like what you need to do first is get into court to file for your summons and petition to establish parental rights and establish your custody and get, you know, maybe a better or a more consistent court order to be followed by both, because it sounds like it would be in the best interest of the child also not to have things so unsure.
BJ, tell Alejandro, if you would, most counties, I believe, have what's called a family facilitator's office. Could you explain that briefly to Alejandro? Because it may be helpful to him to get started in terms of having some direction that will help him to get some kind of order from the court. Would you describe that to him?
Sure. California, it's actually a California state law that all counties had to create what we call a family law facilitator, which is a clinic free to self-represented litigants where it's run by attorneys, where you can go into the facilitator's office and get help in drafting the proper pleadings that you need and to get things started and to help you represent yourself through the process. The other thing that I know our office does, as well as many other offices, is a lot of attorneys, when it looks like the other side has more income and there are statutes to allow for recovery of attorney's fees, we have in California what we call representation under limited scope, meaning we will take and represent the client first under the limited scope just to get in and get an attorney's fees order so that they can afford us to represent them on the rest of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of attorneys are doing that as well. So you can go into the family law facilitator's office and get things started, and then you can shop around to see if you can find an attorney that will take limited scope to seek attorney's fees from the other side.
So that's something you can do, Alejandro.
Okay, that would be great. So that would give me a chance to get a lawyer, because I just have this fear of me going in by myself, not knowing the laws and regulations, going into an office, and then boom, I'm stuck.
Well, what you do, Alejandro, because you're not familiar with the court system. What you want to do is check. Do you have a computer?
Yes.
Yeah. Check for Alameda County, and look under the. There should be a sub listing for the Family Law Facilitator's Office, which will tell you, what steps you might take. You're going to have to go to the court or to the Family Law Facilitator's Office personally, but at least if you look at on your computer. Accessing the Alameda County's website and Family Law Facilitator's office, it'll tell you how to, what you need to do to get there and get things started and determine whether or not this is something you feel you can do on your own or not. So good luck to you.
And Alejandro, you're going to want to get there early. It's usually first come, first serve.
Okay.
So when you go on the website, see what time the court opens, which is usually 8. I believe it's 8 o'clock in Oakland also. You want to get there fairly early because you'll find people are lined outside the door, and most of them are there lined up to get into the Family Law Facilitator's Office.
And one more thing I want to tell you, Alejandro, is next week, which we do every month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month, while I'm doing a live program, by the way, next week the topic on the air will be marijuana in the workplace. But we also, the fourth Wednesday of the month, we do something called Call a Lawyer Night. And I will have a number of attorneys here at the station, KLW in San Francisco, who will be in the conference room, who will be taking calls off the air on an 800 number. And we will have someone, and I will announce this, who is a family law specialist with whom you can speak and get some more information that way. It's a great service that these attorneys who come to the station once a month and give of their time to the listeners, and there's no obligation on your part, so I suggest that you do that. And the phone number, if you want to jot it down, for next week, which will be May 24th, starting at 7 p.m., is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. But certainly, if you would join us for the program next week, and I'll remind you about doing it. So you don't need to call on the air next week, but listen to the program, and I'll, again, give the announcement for Call a Lawyer. Thank you very much for calling.
Would you recommend a mediator?
Well, I think you need to speak. Now you're getting down to specifics on this,
okay.
and the state bar does not permit my guest to give specific legal advice on the air, and you're now trying to abbreviate something that you need to spend more time with, and I think you need to have a face-to-face discussion, or at least a minimum of a lengthy telephone discussion with an attorney before you determine whether or not mediation would work. So good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. All right, let me again invite you to call in our toll-free number if you have a question in the family law area, wherever you may be. If you're listening to the program on the Internet at www.kalw.org, which makes the program national. Please use our toll-free number and call in, 866-798-8255, and take advantage of the fact that I have these two very experienced family law attorneys with me. And whether you're in, whether it's California or New Jersey or Texas or wherever, it's worth it to you to call in and speak, ask your question on the air, and maybe you'll get some direction that might be helpful to you for the future of if you're having a family law problem. So, all right, people are very quiet. I hope it means that there are not problems out there, although I think, BJ, you tell me this. What are the statistics today as to what the percentage of people it is who are married who are applying for divorces? What is that statistic today in California? Do you know?
My understanding is in California it's at about 51%.
51%. So there's a lot of unfortunate family problems, and I think we have to deal with it. You know, Alejandro brought up this whole idea of mediation. Can you, at least in California, respond briefly without giving him any kind of specific legal advice about what the potential for mediation is and whether or not it may be something that he should seek in his situation of having a child with someone else who is not his wife?
Absolutely. In California, actually, the law requires that prior to a court making any permanent or long-term determination of custody and visitation in a child's custody issue, they must attend mediation through the court. And all the counties have set up either, most of the large counties have their own family court services where they have counselors that are either masters in social work or licensed marriage and family therapists who are there that help mediate the parties first. And then if mediation fails, it gets referred back, and then the court will make a determination. But before the court's allowed to do that, they can only make temporary or emergency custody orders. Before they can make a long-term or permanent order, they have to attend mediation.
Here's a question.
We have something very similar here in New Jersey, I always strongly recommend that, in particular with custody disputes, that parties sit down and work out their issues, whether it's with a court-appointed mediator, whether it's with a private mediator, whether it's just with two attorneys that can give you good guidance and advice, and you sit down in a room and hash everything out. No one is ever happy when a judge makes a determination. And when you give away the control of your children's future to someone who doesn't know you, doesn't know your children, doesn't know your significant other, and may or may not care that much about all of the fine details of your life, you're not making a wise parenting decision. So resolving these disputes, and I think BJ would probably agree, most cases don't go to trial. Most cases are not ultimately resolved by a judge. People resolve them on their own. And whether you want to call that a formal mediation or just negotiating and resolving your dispute, it's definitely the preferable.
You have at least some control because of your involvement in the mediation, which is very valuable. Here's a question that was just brought in to me. It was brought to by phone to Martin, who is my assistant producer on the program. If an estranged or separated spouse grabs the child and runs off out of the jurisdiction, what can you do? You've been talking a great deal about that, but what response do you have for that person who still has that question?
contact an attorney. Make sure that attorney has handled these types of cases specifically in the past. You can look on their website. You can probably Google them and make sure that, you know, there's something about them. Speak with them in person. Check their credentials. Go in, speak with them, and have them put together a plan with you as to exactly how you're going to handle the situation. It's not the immediate type of response that people want. The reality is that oftentimes it can take days, weeks, months, years sometimes to get children back.
Yeah.
The initial response and the initial guide that you have in the process can oftentimes determine how quickly and how efficiently these cases can move. So I strongly recommend to a person in that situation, go seek out good legal counsel. Yes, it's going to cost you money, but you're better off spending a little bit of money now than a lot of money later to clean up a mess.
And again,
that's true. I mean, we get so many where people tried to save the money that they did not want to pay an attorney, and what they don't realize is when they bring it to us after the fact, it's going to cost them twice as much, sometimes three times as much, because we have to unwind everything that was done first, and then it's going to cost more delay. But the other thing is, if when they say leave the jurisdiction, if there's already been an order, custody order issued, we can't tell by the question, but let's say there's a custody order issued and the other party only has visitation and has refused to return the child and has left, then as Amy was saying before, you want to immediately file a police report and bring a copy of the custody order to the police department with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be important to, in that case, if you already have an order, then also contact an attorney, but you want to get it to the police as soon as possible, especially if you don't know where they're going to take the child.
Let me just mention again, a lot of people are very concerned. I find this in all of the programs, or most of the topics that we deal with, that people are very, reluctant to think about retaining an attorney because attorneys are so expensive. That's the general thinking of most people. And yet, I think for you, I'm a great believer in people trying to educate themselves through the lawyer referral service that's available throughout California. And I don't know what the situation is in most of the other states, but for a small amount of money, generally speaking in California, $25 to $35, you can have an initial 30-minute consultation with an attorney, which may give you a lot of information to help you plan what you're going to do next. So it's a great way with a small investment to kind of find out what your situation is and where you may be going and how serious it may be. Carol, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Great. Just two quick points. One, I did ask how to spell the attorney's name, so next time...
Oh, no, let me do it right now. Let me do it right now. Carol, let me interrupt you right now.
Okay.
From the standpoint of my guest from New Jersey, Howell, New Jersey, Amy, A-M-Y, Sarah, S-A-R-A, Kors, C-O-R-E-S, is my guest in Howell, New Jersey. Her office number is area code 732-414-6669. My California guest, who's been a guest on the program many, many times, and B.J. Fatum, it's B as in boy, J as in jewel. I'm not sure that those initials stand for that, but it's B.J. Fatum, F-A-D-E-M, pronounced Fatum.
Excellent.
And B.J., pardon me, his office is in San Jose and in California. His phone number is area code 408-280-1220. So those are the guests and the phone numbers. Did you have something else, Carol?
Yes. My second point is, could Amy go through the points of how to prevent the child abduction, as she was talking about something having to do with passports before the break?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Amy, would you finish that? We're nearly at the end of the entire program. Could you do that? I cut you off before when you were talking about passports. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. So just back to that. So we'll put in provisions into agreements that talk about obtaining passports, who's going to hold the passports, use of the passports for travel, return of the passports, and a couple of other things that we'll do is I have a form, what I call a consent to travel document, where the parents will be required to complete the document, and it contains all of this language that I would want in a court order that I would call a pickup or a return order. So if a parent wrongfully withholds the child in another country, I've got a document that basically establishes that the parents did not intend for the child to remain in that country. and that can then, and we get it notarized, and each parent would get an original of it, and that just facilitates and really deters a parent from taking a child on vacation and then retaining that child in the other country, because there's their signature on a document that says that they did not intend to do it for any reason whatsoever. The other thing that we'll do is we'll build into agreements that if we know a child is going to be spending a lot of time in another country, we'll have the agreement translated into the foreign language and have it registered in the other country. And we were talking before we came on the air today about how you can do that across state lines too. So if you get divorced in California and one parent moves to New Jersey, you can then register your divorce decree from California in New Jersey. It's a fairly simple process that you can do on your own without an attorney, pretty much in every state. And then that order will be there for enforcement purposes. So putting together well-drafted agreements, again, that requires having an attorney who really knows what they're doing. And there's quite a few in just about every state. And they'll draft the agreement, putting in all of this protective language. You'll register agreements in foreign jurisdictions, putting in place restrictions on passports, putting in place a fairly detailed protocol for international travel. I wouldn't necessarily do that with interstate travel. It's a little bit easier to get children returned within the United States than it is internationally. But again, that requires having an attorney who really knows what they're doing.
We have come nearly to the end of the program. Final, very brief comments. We have about 25 seconds left. BJ, final comments.
I think Amy touched on it, that if at all possible, you want to try and prevent the wrongful abduction of the children. But if, in fact, it does happen, you want to get to an attorney as soon as possible. Even if you don't think you have the money, there are a lot of attorneys that may do it on pro bono. Amy and I both do a couple pro bono Hague.
We have come to the end of the program. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Thank you both very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Amy Sarah Kors, National Board of Trial Advocacy Certified Family Law Trial Advocate with Law Office Kors and Associates in Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L, New Jersey. And B.J. Fadum, specialist in family law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization with Law Office in San Jose, California. Thank you both very much. It's been great having you on the program.
Thank you, Chuck. It's a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed it both. Next time on Your Legal Rights, everyone, our focus will be on employment law, and believe it or not, we're going to talk about marijuana in the workplace. And a discussion of California employment law and criminal law, as well as federal law regarding the issues facing employers and employees. My guests will be Danielle Lucido, Chief Counsel for the Engineers and Scientists of California, Local 20, which is a union. Jonathan Judge, an attorney who represents employers and is a partner in the law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. And Jeff Hayden, a certified specialist in criminal law and chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. That's what we're doing next week. Your Legal Rights production staff members, our program engineer, Debbie Kennedy. Debbie, lovely to have you here. And production assistant, Martin McLean. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution, and by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. I thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.